therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You are listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream here at KFARradio.com, even when it's 25 damn below. I've got Nick Nugent here with me. He's going to give us a great story today, and you're going to like it. How's that for an attitude?
I like it, Dave. It's just weather, who cares?
Yeah, well, probably no one, but what the heck. Oh, by the way, you can call in at 907-458-TALK. 907-458-8255 if you want to ask a question about the exceptional story that Mr. Nugent is going to be giving us. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well, thanks. I think like we talked about, I've just had my 50th wedding anniversary last weekend, and you know, it's one of those things, you sit around minding your own business, and all of a sudden, 1975 was 50 years ago.
I know. You know, I so enjoy reading in the newspaper, the Newsminer, you know, 10 years ago, 25, 50, 75, 100 years ago, what they had in the newspaper. And at 50 years ago, it's all about the pipeline.
Oh, sure.
You know, things like that. And how the 798 pipeliners union out of Oklahoma would shut down the pipeline construction. This just, we didn't like the dessert today. We're all on strike.
Sounds a little bit like going to Italy. All of a sudden, the trains quit running whenever a major soccer game breaks out.
Yeah. And so today at the same paper, I'm reading how ConocoPhillips is fighting unionization up there and on the North Slope, and also decreasing their workforce by 12 to 14%. I'm thinking, yeah, they're reading 50 years ago today what was going on.
They are certainly different times, aren't they?
Yes, yes. But what are we going to discuss today?
Well, we're talking about Joseph Whiteside Boyle. Joe was a Canadian. He was very involved in the Klondike, but we're going to go a lot beyond his involvement in the Klondike. He was just a remarkable character. And we will come back to Joe in maybe a month or two when I'm going to do one program on the mechanization of the mining. And we'll talk about Boyle again and a fellow named A.N.C. Treadwell.
The A.J. mine.
Yes. And Treadwell could have absolutely been a model for Snidely Whiplash, if you remember him in the
yes.
old art. Kind of a villain.
Yes. Where's Natasha?
Well, Boyle was born in Toronto, Ontario, on November 6, 1867. He was the son of a Canadian horse racing Hall of Fame trainer, Charles Boyle, and his wife, Martha Bain Boyle. Charles was an excellent breeder and trainer. His mares won the Queen's Cup yearly from 1891 to 1901. So that would be pretty much like winning the Kentucky Derby with the same trainer 10 years straight in a row.
Yeah, my goodness.
Very big deal. His family immigrated from the Ulster region of Ireland, modern Northern Ireland, to Canada in 1839. The Boyle family were Protestants and Unionists in their political sympathies, so getting out of Ulster probably wasn't an all bad thing.
There you go.
That was before the Republic, of course, but
yeah.
Certainly a lot of turmoil was starting in those days. Boyle was a pretty remarkable guy. his life would make, I think, an incredible motion picture or like a Netflix original. It wasn't without good cause.
I'm a prime guy.
There you go. It wasn't without good cause that he was known by a lot of people as the King of the Klondike. He was a mining promoter, sports enthusiast, military officer, patriot, spy, consort to Queen Marie of Romania. He was decorated by Russia. Eventually, he was awarded the title Savior of Romania. In all, Boyle was awarded the following: the Distinguished Service Order by England, the Croix de Guerre from France, the Order of the Star of Romania, Grand Cross, the Order of the Crown of Romania in the commander level, the Order of Regina Maria, which is for doing special work for the Queen herself, and then, at the same time, he was given the Order of St. Vladimir by Russia, the Order of St. Anne, and the Order of St. Stanislaus. This is all for a guy that started out as a farm kid in Canada. I think it shows us his personality.
Wow.
Well, his family moved from Toronto to the more rural Woodstock when Joe was 17. That life was a little bit quiet for Joe, so he ended up taking a short trip around the New England states. He ended up in New York, where his father was advancing some business interests. Whenever possible, Joe would slip off and go down to the docks. He loved the boats coming in and out, fascinated by the tales he heard. And one evening, he met the master of the ship Wallace, W.A. Smith. A few days later, he was off for India and left a note to his brothers: "I've gone to sea, don't worry, Joe." This short jaunt turned into 3 years, with the very first voyage almost ending in disaster when a major storm took the main mast off the ship. Boyle was credited by the captain later with setting such an example at 17 years old, which encouraged the exhausted sailors to man the pumps for several days straight and keep the ship from foundering. Well, the Wallace fell on a period of poor income, sat idle waiting more cargoes. Joe signed on for a trip headed for England. That trip went just as well as his first trip, when the captain ran aground off the coast of Ireland and Joe saved several sailors from drowning. From there, it was a trip to New York aboard the Susan. Joe had saved all of his money. He was neither a drinker nor a smoker. He didn't gamble, and he was able to invest in the cargo, and it turned out to be quite a profitable voyage. Well, Joe did everything quickly. He met and married a divorcee, Mildred Rayner, who had a 2-year-old son named William. Joe bought a feed and freighting business, quickly built a business which allowed him to purchase a home on 93rd Street and one in Red Bank, New Jersey. They also had a child, Joe Jr. Sadly, where Joe had all of these very frugal habits and very ordered, his wife was a little bit more pretentious, flighty, and a spendthrift. They separated in June of 1896. Well, Joe met Frank Slavin, if you remember Slavin's. And he was an Australian boxer. Joe used the knowledge that he had learned while managing the Hoboken Athletic Club to manage Frank. Slavin went to London for an exhibition match and unfortunately received the beating of his career. He seemed to choke in the major matches. Joe now decided that perhaps the Klondike was a wonderful place to go. Well, not the Klondike, but Alaska, Canada. Klondike hadn't been discovered yet. To build funds, Joe arranged for a boxing tour and made a lot of money knowing who to bet on in the different bouts.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. We're going to do some price fixing here. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
May your holidays be filled with joy and happiness.
and not filled with a full septic tank. This message from your friends at North Star Honey Wagon, wishing you and your family many happy flushes this holiday season.
Happy holidays from everyone at the Spur and Tony Sports Bar. Whether you're two-stepping under the mistletoe or raising a glass with friends, they're grateful to celebrate the season with you. From everyone at the Spur and Tony Sports Bar, cheers to a joyful holiday and an even better new year.
Hi, this is Meadow Rydell with Kinross Fort Knox. This year, the Fairbanks Community Food Bank is facing one of their biggest challenges, with a near record of families in need. Please join us at Fort Knox in supporting the food bank through the holiday Hearts of Gold. During December, we'll match your financial gifts to the food bank. Find out more online at fairbanksfoodbank.org or call 907-457-4273. Holiday magic happens when we all work together. Thank you from Kinross Fort Knox.
Hey, it's Craig Campo inviting you to kick back with me by the campfire every Saturday for the Outdoor Show. We'll be talking about living the Alaskan outdoor dream with fascinating guests, even some favorite stories and memories from a lifetime spent on the trails and waterways, hunting, fishing, and camping across this great state. Join me, Craig Campo, for the Outdoor Show, brought to you by Campos since 1945. Listen in Saturday afternoons at 12:30 p.m. for the Outdoor Show right here on KFAR Radio.
Honey, you want to come out? I haven't seen you since Glass Doctor installed our custom shower enclosure.
No thanks.
Well, you can't keep eating breakfast in the shower. And laminating your magazines is getting expensive. You remember we have guests coming over tonight, right?
Oh, I'm sure they'd love to see the shower.
It's our neighbors, and I highly doubt they want to be hanging out in our bathroom.
The shower's so good, you'll never want to leave. Visit glassdoctor.com today and schedule an appointment online.
Weather brought to you by CNR Pipe. Weather in Alaska can change fast, but you can always count on CNR Pipe, Alaska's largest metal supplier. Proud to support the last frontier.
KFAR Weather.
High of 22 below this afternoon. Under mainly clear skies, winds out of the north, around 5 miles per hour. Tonight, lows dip down to about 41 below. Chance for snow tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 14 below, mainly clear skies. 2 to 4 inches of snow tomorrow through Friday. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, David Prus in the studio here with Nick Nugent. We're talking about
Joe Boyle, the king of the Klondike.
Now, you know, we work in a purple padded room with North Korean equipment. But this studio is cold. You know,
it is warm today.
You put your hand on stuff, and it's just cold. It just radiates coldness.
I notice it's cold enough it's making our lights flicker.
I know. Fairbanks, what we do to give you a show, the personal trauma that we have to endure, but we do it for you.
You know, though, Dave, I am going to turn my headset off for the rest of the time we take breaks. I was kind of stunned when the pleasant young lady that's the meteorologist said something about 41 below.
I know. Oh, here we go.
Winter's coming. Well, so Joe headed up. They ended up with her boxing tour in San Francisco, made plans to go to Juneau, took off to do that. On July 20th, 1897, they set out to start moving supplies, but Joe had met Captain Moore, if you'll remember, from Skagway, who built the original docks, had a lot to do. It's something that somehow I had kind of missed when I was putting other things together. Well, Joe did admit he had very little idea what he was getting into when he was asked to stake and blaze a trail over White Pass to be a competition with the Chilkoot
trail. Wow, yeah.
They set out in July of 1897 with 14 men, had a lot of people who were hoping to find a better route. Took 3 very miserable days to reach the summit. From there, on a clear day, they could see Lake Bennett. Joe went ahead to blaze the trail to the lake. By August, they had a serviceable pack trail from Skagway to the lake, some rough spots in the mountains, but this trail was later sold to the White Pass for the railroad. So another of Joe's accomplishments, he blazed the trail the White Pass Railroad took. He had thought to bring a collapsible boat, Jill seemed to always be a step ahead on looking at every eventuality. So while everybody else was miserable whipsawing lumber and working away, as soon as the ice went out, Joe and his party went down the river. The boat was good. It got them through the rapids dry and simply. When they got to Dawson, even at that early stage, they found out that pretty much everything was already staked. So Joe went to work for $15 a day on a claim near Discovery on El Dorado Creek, and they spent time getting their arrangements ready for the eventual onset of winter. So Joe was pretty observant, and he saw sooner than most that a single man's labor wasn't going to be the way to recover the Klondike gold. Hand recovery methods, as they were used at that time, left nearly 70% of the available gold in the ground due to lack of decent recovery. There was also the very laborious and slow process of burning through the permafrost, and he knew that hydraulic mining would be the solution. The wide timbered valleys, which were unassailable by hand methods, could be stripped of the needed timber. The timber could be turned into lumber for a profit, and then that money could be invested in the hydraulic mining equipment. As early as 1899, Joe was interviewed by the Dawson Daily News and argued that hydraulic mining was the future. People who were working handwork were wasting their time. He also set out with Slavin, and they began to acquire claims that were thought useless, but only because of the methods that were in place. Joe was acquiring claims that would allow him to bring water to the claims that he knew would produce. So again, he just seemed to have a vision. Order in Council in Canada, PC 125, allowed for dredging. Boyle and Slavin knew they'd have to head to Ottawa to look for investors. Joe began to work into a partnership with Swiftwater Bill Gates.
Wow.
If you remember,
yep.
Gates had this fractional claim that he turned into the Monte Carlo, which was kind of a bar, casino, and brothel combination. Gates accompanied Joe to Whitehorse to check out the recent female arrivals that he might hire to work at the Monte Carlo. Joe headed on outside. They departed in late August. Winter came very early that year. Of course, it was slow going upstream, poling a boat. And by September 24th, winter was in full blast. Ice started running and damaged the boat. During the trip, Gates broke through the ice and was saved by Joe with great effort on Joe's part. At arrival on Carmack's Post, and by the way, that saving Gates, Gates never failed to have the money to help Joe out from that point on. So it was another one of those.
Saved his banker.
Yeah, exactly, he did. So they got to Carmack's Post, which is where the town of Carmack is now. During that trip, of course, we mentioned that. They found another group of stranded travelers there, including Jack London. They were held in place by blizzards until October 29th. They set out for Haines Mission, 100 miles distant. They were going through waist to armpit deep snow with the drifts. They had what should have been a four-day trip. It took 25 days. They shot the pack animals, which were unable to move in the snow, which at least provided them with food. And again, Joe is generally credited by all the others with keeping them moving and not just perishing in the wilderness. They reached Haines Mission on December 23rd, 1897, caught passage to Seattle, and all of the survivors presented Joe with an engraved gold watch for what he had done for them. Joe went on to Ottawa. In early 1898, Slavin joined Joe, and they presented an application to lease 11.5 miles of river frontage. Joe kept up with seeking financing. On February 5th, 1898, Joe met with Clifford Sifton, the prime minister, and they discussed his plan to do hydraulic mining from the mouth of Bonanza Creek upstream to Hunker Creek. They had nearly met the year before, but the snows that were on the trail between CarMax and Haynes Mission kept them separated. Sifton couldn't make it on to Dawson, turned around and went back to Ottawa. So they had a near miss, if you will. Joe sent Slavin back to Dawson, made a verbal deal with the Canadian Yukon Company. That deal unfortunately fell through because the Canadian government seemed to be sitting on their hands quite a bit. When Joe did return to Dawson, July 7th, 1898, he found another miner named Stewart had encroached on 3.6 miles of Boyle's concession. Stewart had a crew of 50 lumberjacks who were armed, and that kind of set off the fighting Joe Boyle side, and Joe hired his own crew of armed lumberjacks, and they kind of stabilized the situation by fortunately, no one fired the first shot. He eventually won the timber license. Well, unfortunately, out of all that, most hurt were the miners who were in desperate need of milled lumber. So by early 1899, the partners were making a fortune. Wood, which had sold for $18 per cord, just the scrap wood for firewood, was now up to $48, and they had a sawmill going. Slavin was a poor business partner. He had a drinking problem. Boyle bought out his share for $20,000, which in 1898 was a pretty good chunk of money. By September, Boyle owned real estate in Dawson, a wharf, a warehouse, half interest in a hydraulic grant, and 16 claims. But by June of 1899, the Canadian government still had not acted. Turns out that Sifton was in negotiations with ANC Treadgold to organize a monopoly on concessions which would steal the water rights needed by Boyle. And when we come back in a month or so and talk about this period of time in Dawson, every time there was an election in Canada for several years, either Boyle or Treadgold were on top for a while. And it was really just a kind of a disgusting political patronage situation. Well, Joe did well with the lumber. He now had two mills. He was producing 1 million board feet a year. His relation with Swiftwater Bill began to pay off. They both had properties on Quartz River, and Swiftwater Bill started buying the equipment and getting it moved while Joe ran the mills and basically sort of did the planning. He was the organizer. He returned to Dawson after doing a quick trip out to Ottawa. And on July 11th, 1899, a new Mrs. Boyle arrived.
Oh, boy.
So Joe didn't always plan the wife things out too well. Only 3 years later, on July 11th, same day, 1903, she departed, never to return. Her departure coincided with a return to moral respectability in Dawson, which outlawed gambling, closed the music halls, and eliminated the red light district.
Oof. So what do we don't know about Mrs. Boyle?
Yes,
that's not being said.
I think that we can read between the lines and kind of say, ouch.
Yeah. Well, you know, just one of those things. And now Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break here. And we have some bumper music, Paula Abdul, Cold Hearted. And it's cold outside, so Cold Hearted from Paula Abdul, who was a dancer, one of the Laker girls.
Yes.
Who, you know, so this is only in Fairbanks, Alaska at 20 below.
Yeah. Are they choosing this music just to pull your leg?
Bamboozle me. And then we're going to have some Fox News, some state news commercials, some weather, and we don't want to hear what the weather is because we all know what the weather is, but we will be back.
Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at
KFARradio.com. This is a Fox News alert. I'm John Saucier. The Federal Reserve wrapping up its two-day meeting, and as expected, it decided to cut its interest rates a quarter percentage point. This will be the third and final cut of the year. President Trump trying to ease concerns about the economy. Speaking in Pennsylvania last night, House Speaker Mike Johnson directing blame towards the Biden administration.
The Biden administration spent like drunken sailors, and they attempted to tax and regulate their way to prosperity, and we all knew when they were doing it that it would not work. It had exactly the opposite effect.
Delaware Democratic Congresswoman Sarah McBride blames the Trump administration and Republicans for the affordability crisis.
A choice to impose a tariff tax on small businesses and consumers. A choice to cut food assistance. And a choice to insert a $1 trillion bomb into the center of the American healthcare system.
Recent Fox News poll said 76% of voters view the economy negatively. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
Radio Kenai reports the Bureau of Land Management is launching major fee reductions and opening expanded woodcutting areas across Alaska this winter, offering families new ways to save money on Christmas trees and firewood while supporting forest health. Under a new initiative called $1, One Tree, the BLM is reducing many personal use Christmas tree and firewood permits to just $1 through January 31st. The agency is also increasing access to cutting areas, particularly in overstocked woodlands where thinning supports wildfire prevention efforts. In Alaska, public lands are at the heart of our family traditions and way of life, BLM Alaska State Director Kevin Pendergrass said in a statement. With these fee reductions and expanded access, it's easier for people to bring home firewood and Christmas trees for the season, all while supporting healthier forest and reducing hazardous fuels. Up-to-date information on permit locations, cutting area maps, and safety guidelines is available on the BLM's Forest and Wood Products Permits webpage.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Contractors, architects, and engineers. When it comes to your big print needs, Advanced Printing has you covered. We are your trusted local source for technical printing. Whether you need large format blueprints, detailed technical drawings, or blueprint scanning services, we deliver sharp, accurate results fast. Rush orders? No problem. Advanced Printing is built to deliver with fast turnarounds and unmatched quality. Visit hotprinter.com or call us at 907-451-1111. Advanced Printing, serving Fairbanks for over 40 years.
Advanced Printing, where your business means a mint to us.
Optimize your eyes with Mountain View Eye Center, Interior Alaska's choice for state-of-the-art eye care. Find relief with the most advanced dry eye center in the interior. See clearly and be free of your reading glasses and contacts for good. Optimize your eyes with Mountain View Eye Center. Surgeons Dr. Laura Kearsley and Dr. Jason Crosby specialize in premium cataract surgery, LASIK laser vision correction, and treatment of eye disease. All insurance accepted. Schedule your consultation. Visit MountainViewEyes.com.
GCR Tires and Service introduces the Cooper Discoverer Stronghold AT All-Terrain All-Season Tire. Lock in control with aggressive tread design that anticipates Alaska's ever-changing roads. Cooper Discoverer Stronghold AT, superior performance on and off the road. On rocks, loose gravel, severe snow, ice, and mud. Yet Stronghold AT is quietly responsive on the road as well. Now it's your turn. Buy your Cooper Discoverer Stronghold AT tires at GCR Tires and Service. The Tire Guys. Taming the Alaskan Road, Van Horn at Cushman.
Looking for something that's sure to wow family and guests? Reorder at Tommy G's Meat and Sausage and taste the difference. This holiday season, Tommy G's is proud to offer certified Angus beef prime rib, smoked hams, and smoked turkeys. These mouth-watering, high-quality meats are sure to be the centerpiece of any holiday dinner. Reorder now at TommyG'sAlaska.com. Supplies are limited, and trust us, they will go fast. Happy holidays from everyone at Tommy G's. Tommy G's Meat and Sausage, where quality and flavor meet.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. Mr. Nugent and I are powering through this icy interior that we're experiencing. The things we do.
You know, I'm glad we can sit and look at what Joe went through and realize just how comfortable we actually are.
I feel like a wimp.
Oh, just...
Thanks for putting that on the air, too.
Joe made a deal with Sigmund Rothschild of the Detroit Yukon Mining Company, so now he's got the Rothschilds involved. Just things seem to happen around Joe. Joe had a very lively mind. And sometimes I would almost think a short attention span if it weren't for the things that he accomplished. Well, now he suddenly has an interest in hockey. And he was a member of the Dawson Athletic Club. He founded a hockey club there, built the rink totally, donated the flat land for the rink. Hockey became very wildly popular, and several teams were formed, and a lot of them hired ringers from Eastern leagues. An outside reporter who was there said some of the best hockey he had ever seen was being played in Dawson by these teams from the mines. Well, during the 1901-1902 season, somebody came up with the idea to challenge for the Stanley Cup. And, of course, the Stanley Cup wasn't the sole possession of the NHL at that time. It was open to amateur hockey clubs that wanted to compete. Well, so the team was renamed the Yukon Nuggets, and they prepared to head out. Because of a lack of snow, the whole team either walked or rode bicycles from Dawson to Whitehorse. There, they got in a really bad blizzard, which delayed the train, and the team endured this pretty terrible sea voyage. Eventually, they arrived in Ottawa 5 days late. They'd had only one practice during the prior month. The Nuggets lost their first game 9-2. It was double elimination. That game, though, was at least highlighted by a 15-minute penalty given to a Dawson player who broke his stick over the head of the Ottawa goalie. The second game was no better. Dawson lost 23-2. Well,
okay. That's a hockey score, right?
Yeah. This time it was.
Yeah. Sounds like a Gold Kings game.
Everything I could find never mentioned anything about was the goalie actually injured very bad. That
I
didn't
know.
Seem to be part of it. Well, Joe took a 4-year hiatus from the North until 1909. 1904, Detroit Mining offered $750,000 for the concessions. But they then withdrew the offer and offered a deal based on cash, stock, and future royalties, the new company to be named Canadian Klondike Mining. It wasn't a very good deal for Joe, but for the first time he seemed to be a little bit tired and accepted it. But Joe wasn't accepting it just to put himself in the out. He waited patiently and watched as Rothschild touted all of his plans, kept track of everything that he said he was going to do. And in early 1907, Rothschild sold 10,000 shares of Canadian Klondike to the Guggenheims for $10,000. Joe instantly struck with a lawsuit, and now he was named the largest stockholder, and he had control of the company. And this is kind of a repeated thing with Joe during his Klondike years. Even when he was down, he had the patience to wait and see what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Canadian Klondike was placed into receivership. Lawsuits proceeded in both the U.S. and Canada. Eventually, one of Joe's suits placed the syndicate members into a position of risk they were not willing to accept. Joe bought the 20,000 contested shares for $20 each, so $400,000, when at one time they'd apparently been worth $750,000. And he had 3 years to pay with no interest. He returned to the Klondike, and he had a new wife with him.
Number three.
She was described as a rather gentle and wonderful woman, and it turns out that that's true. She was. 1914, August, Great Britain declared war on Imperial Germany. Joe knew that he was old at 46 to be a soldier, so he took another decisive action. He contacted Dr. Alfred Thompson, the Member of Parliament, and asked if he would in turn contact Sir Sam Hughes, who was a defense board member, and Joe would raise a machine gun company, pay for all their training and equipment. Due to the lack of the British Army's foresight, they were in critical need of machine guns. Joe's unit turned out in the early part of the war being one-third of the machine gun troops in the whole British Army. Well, the Royal Northwest Mounted Police took over basic training and marksmanship drills. The unit departed on October 10th, 1914, which was coincidentally the day one of Joe's dredges was damaged and sank. KCMC lost a lot of experienced men to military service. Joe had his hands full running the company. But due to various levels of management and mismanagement, the Yukon troops didn't leave Canada until June 11th, 1915, arriving in France in July. But out of that first group, only three men survived. The Motor Machine Gun Corps took the highest casualties in the British Army due to their exposed positions. Well, Joe was fuming when he learned that Sir George Black, a man much older than he was, had used political connections to receive command of a Yukon field force. Joe left Dawson in July 1916, headed for London. His story was that he was en route to negotiate with the South African companies for the Lena Goldfields in Russia. Sir Sam Hughes arrived in London about the same time as Joe, and as a reward for Joe's work, he had Joe made an honorary lieutenant colonel in charge of the machine gun battery on September 13, 1916. This was the opening Joe was waiting for. He immediately bought a number of uniforms tailored. He used gold from his claims rather than the standard brass issue. He spent time with Herbert Hoover, who was a mining engineer, the future president of the U.S. He worked for Granville Mining, a company which had helped Joe originally design the dredges. Joe carried on business long distance with Klondike interests, and he had left his son, Joe Jr., in charge. Well, when the United States entered the war in 1917, they founded the American Committee of Engineers. They were designed to present technical advice to the Allies. They had 59 active and 11 consulting engineers, including Hoover and C.W. Purrington, who knew Joe from the Lena Goldfields projects. Their actual interests, as well as moving scientific information, range from pure science to intelligence gathering. Joe's organizational skills were a perfect fit. At the time, Russia was still in the war with the Allies. He took a 1914 study by the Canadian Pacific Railroad, went to Russia, and took over the mission there and started revamping their railroads. Remember, this is for a guy that was not an engineer and had no formal training in anything, but had this magnificent ability to organize. Well, Joe dropped all and included the preparation for his lawsuits in Canada. He got to Petrograd on June 17th by way of Norway and Sweden. He was untangling the Russian military railways, and he was working with a civilian named John Stevens, the builder of the Panama Canal. By this time, a provisional government ran Russia after the abdication of Tsar Nicholas II. The Bolsheviks were harassing the government, and all supplies were short. Joe had all these letters of introduction. Remember, he's not actually a military man yet, but with the language differences and the very, you know, British love, very official-looking titles and letters, he met the ambassador, Sir George Buchanan. He announced to the ambassador he had come to fix things. That's kind of typical Joe. This caused a wave of quite a bit of panic in the British and Canadian forces in Russia. They had no idea that Joe was even on the way, set off a flurry of cables from Whitehall to Ottawa trying to settle just what was happening. Joe, unaware of all this, had four meetings with Russian officials in 5 days. The Russians, unlike the British, were impressed with a man who comes up, takes charge. That kind of fitted the Russian psyche. He was obviously not some guy that's just going to talk a lot. He was here to do something. The Russians loved him. He was given a staff car and driver. He inspected one of the worst sections of the railroad within 48 hours and put himself in charge of that point.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Take a break from your holiday shopping and enjoy something delicious at your personal Oasis. Instead of grabbing for the last toy on the shelf, do what Santa does. Grab the last French fry or onion ring on the plate. Happy holidays from your friends at the Oasis Restaurant and Lounge, 734 University Avenue.
Hi, this is Dr. Jessica Waller. Dr. Babula and our team and I would like to wish all of you a happy holiday. And may your new year be filled with beautiful smiles.
Hi, this is Dr. Amy Cyberlick here to tell you about Health Talk. Every Saturday at noon, join Dr. Scott Looper from White Spruce Medical and special guests like me who have our fingers on the pulse of Fairbanks Golden Heart. Learn about a wide range of topics and pick up some beneficial health tips and practical health information pertinent to interior Alaskans. Listen live every Saturday at noon or online anytime at kfarradio.com. Health Talk with Dr. Looper, brought to you by White Spruce Medical. Check us out at whitesprucemedical.com.
When it's Alaska cold, wrap yourself and the ones you love in fur from the Fur Factory. Shop the Fur Factory for the perfect holiday gift. Naturally warm, beautiful furs are as practical today as ever. Receive special savings on fur coats, muckluck, mittens, and hats. See Alaskan beaded slippers and gloves by local artisans as well. The Fur Factory's family furriers craft heirloom quality garments you'll treasure for years. Ethically and sustainably harvested. Visit the Fur Factory, 547 2nd Avenue in Fairbanks.
Looking for a way to serve your state and secure your future? The Alaska Army National Guard offers tuition assistance, career training, and part-time service with full-time benefits. Build real-world skills, earn extra income, and be a part of a team that protects Alaska when it matters most. Your adventure starts here. Talk to your local recruiter today. The Alaska Army National Guard. Live here, work here, serve here. Sponsored by the Alaska Army National Guard, aired by the Alaska Broadcasters Association and this station.
KFAR weather.
High temperatures reach up to 22 below this afternoon under mainly clear skies, northerly winds around 5 miles an hour. Mainly clear skies again tonight, lows level off around 41 below. 2 to 4 inches of snow tomorrow through Friday. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Leveling off at 41 below.
That was a different weather forecaster, so I'm assuming that if two people say it, it's more likely to be true.
Well, they're reading the same script.
Okay. Well, hopefully the person who typed that script had better fingers and it's going to be 14 below.
Exactly.
Well, Joe then met General Manikovsky, and General Busilov, the commander-in-chief of the Russian armies. After being there such a short time, Joe handed them a report which led to a total revamping of the way Russians ran their railways. Joe was off to Ukraine. He landed in the middle of a German offensive, using authority that he didn't have, but his very nice uniform and all of his letter of introductions. The Russian army was retreating rapidly. Joe assembled a rear guard comprised mostly of women led by junior officers. They held the line long enough for the main army to build a defensive line. Joe was awarded the Military Order of Stanislaus for that. The British Foreign Office was apoplectic. They told the Russians they had no idea whose orders he operated under. The Russians said, in that case, make him a general. Just wonderful how he got along with them. So Joe, at Russian suggestion, went to Romania for the first time to work on rail issues. The British ambassador in Jassy was more fond of fine wine than Joe's advice. Boyle also ignored the yoke of General de Chandal, a Frenchman, and soon was directly ordering Romanian and Russian troops running the railroads. When the British tried again to rein in Joe, they simply went back to Russia, where they'd have to go through a whole new chain of command. The ambassador described Joe as a man not agreeable to taking orders, though since he was officially a civilian, no one quite knew who should be giving him orders. Well, in October, another chapter opened. A British secret agent, George Hill, was attacked by a German agent at the Bristol Hotel. Joe was there to render help. They became close friends, and Hill asked Joe to attend a meeting in which German agitators and provocateurs were trying to start a riot. Joe sized up the meeting. He had dealt with rowdy miners before. Strode to the stage and delivered this rousing speech that it took two interpreters to keep up with, appealing to the Russian nature, and swung the crowd so fully in favor of the Allies that they ran all of the Germans out of town. The October Revolution toppled the government. Joe went directly to the Petrograd Revolutionary Committee, explained how he was going to restore food shipments, and part of that involved shooting six rail workers each day if they didn't report to work and put in a full day. That appealed to the communists. Joe was able to clear the snarl, and he had food moving in just 2 days. Seeing this, the Romanian government now asked for help. While in transit, though, Joe witnessed the true nature of some of the Bolshevik mobs, and from that point on, he began to work against their interests. Another hardly believable event unfolds for Joe. While he was in Moscow, he was asked by the Romanian government to transport some valuables. These valuables actually consisted of 4 million pounds sterling of currency, 25 million pounds sterling, the money unit, not weight, of gold, and the entire nation's archives and the crown jewels, which had been all moved to Russia during the beginning of the war. It filled 155 rail cars, and the hastily written authority came in handy. Communication was so bad, no one could find out if Joe was doing what he was supposed to, but he had a lot of letters that made it look like he was. He and Hill set off for Romania, 1,450 miles away. At one station, Joe beat off a group of hijackers with a club. They passed through the middle of a battle between the Reds and the Ukrainian nationalists. They passed a burning vodka distillery and loaded all of the vodka they could on the train. Later, a Bolshevik battery blocked the road. When a storm blew in and the weather was bad, Joe brought all of the Reds tea laced with vodka until they were incapacitated. They cut the telegraph wires, commandeered a waiting locomotive, slipped out of town, crossed the border, and were on their way to the Romanian capital. Queen Marie gave an audience to Boyle and Hill. She was a granddaughter of Queen Victoria, 8 years Joe's junior. She was a bit of a drama queen, but a letter she wrote shows that she was greatly attracted to Joe, and they spent Christmas Day together. The British were still trying to remove Joe, sending Ottawa a request, which Ottawa did a perfectly good government thing. They routed it through every department they could think of to slow it down. They passed from official to official, and when it was decided to recall Boyle, they found out they didn't know who to contact. Now, to save the situation in Romania, Joe stepped in with typical swiftness. He had half the horses shot that the army didn't need to provide food. That cut down on the amount of fodder they needed so they could start bringing in fodder and ammunition on the trains. Agitators were identified and imprisoned. The government awarded Joe the Order of Vladimir. Joe was asked to broker a peace deal at this point between Russia and Romania. He was pleased to do so, went back to Petrograd, and at this time we find out that Joe was actually a secret agent for the British Army. He would set up groups of 10 men, each more would recruit 10, so that Joe had over a network of over 400 agents, only 10 of whom ever knew who some of the other members were. So very, very strong network. He had most of the network doing subtle acts of sabotage in the coal mines and railway shops to slow the Bolsheviks down. And, of course, Whitehall again was screaming for his removal, while other parts of the British government as well as the French were funding his network to the tune of tens of millions of dollars. Joe was moving over a lot of Russia and Ukraine to help keep his cover. He occasionally even helped the Bolsheviks in the Donets Basin, for instance. His recommendations increased coal and other fuel supplies by 47%. He continued work on the peace agreement, and they were working this all out. And finally, 2 days before the Germans were getting ready to involve part of Romania in the war, the Russians signed the peace agreement. It was the first peace agreement signed that ended part of the First World War. And again, from a man who was not a professional in anything other than a miner. There were some rough spots during this exchange of prisoners that he was allowed to do. The prisoners were being guarded by a group of Chinese from the International Bolshevik Brigade. And with the language difference and all of the official paperwork and Joe's uniform and medals, he bluffed the Chinese into moving all of the prisoners to a different ship and sailed them to Romania. G was given the Star of Romania with Grand Cross and hailed as the savior of the nation. He was even commended by Trotsky and the Germans, but never by Canada or Britain. He spent most of his free time with Queen Marie. Most believed they were having an affair, which by some of the letters she wrote was almost certainly true. On June 18, 1918, at age 50, Joe suffered a stroke. It was August before he regained normal speech. Queen Marie had him taken to a resort in the Carpathian Mountains where she moved in with him to see to his health. Joe found the Russians had left this huge amount of medical supplies in Bessarabia. He bought those with his own funds and had them moved to Romania and helped set up and establish the Red Cross in that country. Not yet healed, he set off on one last mission to rescue members of the royal family in the Crimea. That failed because he simply could not convince them they were in danger from the Bolsheviks. They hadn't seen everything he had seen. On Armistice Day, he was awarded the Croix de Guerre by France. Three countries had now awarded Joe top honors, but not his own. He returned to London, where he was successful in raising funds for Romania. With no official status, he went and attended the Paris Peace Conference. And out of that, Queen Maria spoke to King George, and he was finally given the Distinguished Service Order. He died April 14, 1923. Queen Maria provided the stone, and in 1983, he was reinterred in Woodstock, Canada. And one of the interesting things, for every year that Queen Maria was alive, a woman decorated Joe's grave.
What are we going to discuss in January when it's a little bit colder?
Well, we'll come back to Harry Carstens and talk about being up on Mount McKinley in roaring, frigid winter winds.
There you go.
It'll be another chance to tell ourselves we're okay.
Thank you very much for this production, man. As I always say, they just don't make them like they used to.
Absolutely not.
They just don't. Fairbanks, you have a great day. I'm going to be missing Friday's show, but Representative Mike Prox will take over for me. I will see you on Monday. You have a great day.